Good morning, church. I'm going to be reading Hosea 2, verses 16 through 23. In that day, declares the Lord, you will call me my husband. You will no longer call me my master. I will remove the names of the Baals from her lips, no longer will their names be invoked. In that day, I will make a covenant for them with the beasts of the field, the birds in the sky, and the creatures that move along the ground. Bow and sword and battle, I will abolish them from the land. So that all may lie down in safety, I will betroth you to me forever. I will betroth you in righteousness and justice and love and compassion. I will betroth you in faithfulness. And you will acknowledge the Lord. And in that day, I will respond, declares the Lord. I will respond to the skies, and they will respond to the earth, and the earth will respond to the grain, and the new wine and olive oil, and they will all respond to Jezreel. I will plant her for myself in the land. I will show my love to the one I called not my loved one. I will say to all those not my people, you are my people. And they will say, you are my God.
Good morning, family. It's good to see you all here today. So I had to buy something this week because I know that I'm going to need it. It may be a little bit old-fashioned nowadays, but I had to get one of these. You know what this is? You probably can't read it all the way back there, but it's a planner. I need it. And I'm not exactly tech-savvy. So I've got a calendar on my desk, and I'm going to have to sync, sort of old school sync, that calendar to this planner, okay? Because I want to know what days are coming up that are important. We all have them, right? I mean, some of you, I haven't put anything in here yet, but I'm going to have this calendar filled up. Maybe not too far ahead, but in some cases I will. I'll look months ahead, right? And put dates in there that are valuable, dates that matter. There will be days coming in the future that I want to take note of. And some of you know exactly what I'm saying. Because on your planner, wherever that is, you've got a first day of vacation planned, right? That day is important to you. At least a couple of you have a wedding date planned. Won't name names, but I know that's on the calendar. Is it not? Yes. Some days we all have that are special, like birthdays marked on our calendar. Mine, September 22nd. So if you want to put that on your calendar, feel free to. It's your calendar. It's your planner. September 22nd. Those days matter, don't they? There's some days that we think about, we dream about. We don't just mark them on our calendar. We think about them quite a bit. We look forward to them. We can't wait till that day gets here. Well, in our text this morning, God shares with Hosea about a day that will be better than every wedding day you can think of. A day that will be better than every birthday. And listen, they're great. Don't get me wrong. A first day of vacation is wonderful too. But all of those days pale in comparison to that day. That day when God will make right all kinds of wrongs. Hosea talks about this day, and no doubt the people of Israel in Hosea's day, as they were reading through this text, They know that that day is coming. And they can read about, just as we can and will and have this morning, read about certain things that God will do on that day that will blow your mind. They are so incredibly wonderful that we can anticipate that day too. In fact, and we're going to unpack this a little bit as we go through this text, that day will not be just future for us, but it is for the people in Hosea's day. They looked forward in hope to this day that the Lord talks about in Hosea chapter 2, verses 16 through 23. They could look forward to this day with great hope because God is going to do some wonderful things on that day. So come to the text with me. We're going to unpack what those things are that God will do on that day. And what we see first is that on that day, God will set right our worship. On that day, God will set right our worship. If you look at verses 16 through 17, you will see that, again, this is the Lord declaring that in that day, there it is, and that phrase, that day, is repeated a number of times in our text. In that day, declares the Lord, you will call me my husband. You will no longer call me my master. I will remove the names of the Baals from her lips. No longer will their names be invoked. We have already talked a number of times in the few sermons that we've had thus far as we've made our way through Hosea, and we know that what characterized the people of Israel in this day was idolatry. They could not be called true worshipers. They were called idolaters. That's what they were known as, because instead of worshiping the one true God, instead of committing themselves to the Lord, they were worshiping all kinds of false gods. As Hosea has made clear, there was this spiritual adultery that was pervasive in the land. They didn't want to worship the one true God. They didn't want to be known as worshipers, even though that's what they should have been known as. They were known as idolaters. But that's not what they should have been known as. Imagine a friend calling you over to their house because they've remodeled their living room. And they're excited. They've done all this work to their living room and they want to show you that they fixed it up real nice. So they've built this up for you, and you go over there and you're excited. You're like, what am I going to see? This is cool. You know, if you're like me, you love living rooms. This sounds weird, but I'm going somewhere with this. You love living rooms because that's where people can gather, right? I love living rooms. Even if maybe they're a little older or whatever. Because I like sitting with people in their living room. It's fun. I like people to sit with me in my living room, okay? So I like living rooms, right? So someone said that to me, come over and look, I remodeled my living room. I'd actually be excited. It's not my living room, but I'd be excited. You know, let me check this out. So you go into the living room, and immediately you notice that the walls are lined with bubble wrap. Yeah, bubble wrap. I didn't misspeak just now. Bubble wrap. You're going to notice that right away, right? Now, would you think that was odd? Listen, I would. I'm just being honest, right? I would think that was really odd. But do you know that bubble wrap, the two men who originally made it, intended for it to be wallpaper? I'm serious. You can go Google it. The two guys who originally invented bubble wrap intended for it to be wallpaper. Listen, I'm sorry. Bubble wallpaper does not have the ring that bubble wrap does. Right? I mean, we all know that the real purpose of bubble wrap is to pack your dishes when you move. It's incredibly effective, incredibly functional. You don't put it on your wall. I mean, maybe if you got kids that are like running into the wall or something, you might put bubble wrap. But in general, you don't want bubble wrap on your wall. Now, as foolish as that might sound to you, listen, it's less foolish than the people of God being idolaters rather than worshipers. That's really foolish. To be known as, you know, bubble wallpaper doesn't have the ring that bubble wrap does. Listen, calling God's people idolaters definitely doesn't have the ring that calling them worshipers does. It doesn't matter whether people, that's what people think is okay, or, oh, it's fine. You know, I'm doing my thing and you do your thing. No. You were not meant to worship false gods. I was not meant to worship false gods. None of us were meant to be idolaters. We were meant to be worshipers of the one true God. This is what God wants. The one who made us desires for us to worship Him. But listen, He's the one that's got to make the move, and He does. We can't just say, well, we'll try to muster up the strength and we'll do what's necessary. Listen, God is the one who takes the initiative to set right our worship. And He does it. In the text, He does not say, this is what I want you to do. He says, I will remove the names of the Baals from their lips. No longer will their names be invoked. He is going to make a move in that day to do away with the Baals on their lips. That the false idols, the little g gods, will be replaced by the worship of the one true God. That is how it should be. And on that day, that will be how it will be. We also see in the text that not only will God set right our worship, but we also see that on that day, God will set right our world. On that day, God will set right our world. You know, sometimes I think when Christians talk about redemption, they send a message about redemption that's very people-centered. And listen, that's not bad. We should. Because from Genesis on, it is made clear that men and women, that boys and girls, humanity is the pinnacle of God's creation. We have a special place in the created order, and that matters to God, and that ought to matter to us. But sometimes we ignore the rest of creation and what the Scriptures have to say about what God intends to do redemptively for the rest of creation. And that's a mistake. Because God didn't just make us. He made the world. He made the favorite dogs that some of you have, right? And I guess cats, He made the cats too. I love dogs, and cats are a different story, but they're still, the animals are created by Him. You know, to hear Tim say that he's on the beach and the grains of sand. I mean, listen, there's nothing in the created order that doesn't have our Maker's, our Creator's touch there, right? There's nowhere in the created order that you can go. You can't walk through the woods. You can't go to the beach without recognizing, at least you should, that what you see has been crafted by our Creator, the same one who made us. And that's important because I think we forget how much he is an artist who loves all of his art. Some of you like to do art, right? You paint or you sculpt. Do you have your favorite piece or two? Sure. I don't know that I've ever met an artist that didn't have their favorite work of art prominently maybe displayed in their home or their office or whatever the case may be, because there's certain pieces of their art that they love. Do they trash the rest of it, though? I don't think so. I mean, I like art, too, and I have my favorite pieces, but I don't trash the other because I made those, too. And if you're an artist, I'm certain that you're the same way, that you have your favorite pieces, but that doesn't mean you don't love the other pieces of artwork that you have crafted. Listen, God wants to restore all of His creation, not just us, to His original intention. Look at verse 18, and then we'll jump down to 21 through 22. In verse 18, in the first part, we read, "In that day," there it is again, "in that day, I will make a covenant for them with the beast of the field, the birds in the sky, and the creatures that move along the ground." And then if we jump down to verse 22, "In that day, I will respond, declares the Lord, I will respond to the skies, and I will respond to the earth, and the earth will respond to the grain, the new wine, and the olive oil, and they will respond to Jezreel." You see, there's coming a day, that day, when He will begin to literally set things right by reversing the curse. This is incredible. The curse has that we see in the early chapters of Genesis, the curse immediately begins to mar and deface God's beautiful creation. But He is in the process even now of making all things new. There's coming a day when He will do that completely and fully, but He's already renewing His broken creation. But here's the problem. Our mindset is very similar to the folks in Hosea's day. We look at creation as something that we can treat with contempt and that it exists for us. And so we can take creation and we can fashion it into idols. We treat it as if it's ours. Not that we are stewards over that creation, but that the creation belongs to us. And so we do not treat it in a way that brings honor and glory to the one who made it. But the world very much matters to God, even if the ones entrusted to take care of it have failed. The Israelites are reminded in this text of this timeless truth, and they're told by God Himself that there is coming a day when He will right the wrongs done not only to His people, but also to His good creation. Thirdly, on that day, God will set right our warmongering. On that day, God will set right our warmongering. I love, love, love verse 18. Listen to the second half. "Bow and sword and battle I will abolish from the land, so that all may lie down in safety." I'm convinced that this is a message, that this is a a statement by God that needs to be heard as much by us as Americans as the Israelites did in their day. Because and we're not the only ones, but the truth is that we struggle with this. We struggle with believing that the way to bring about peace is via the sword. We struggle with believing that we can live, that the only way to live in comfort, the only way to handle problems is via violence. And it's become so much ingrained into who we are that we even make it sort of a litmus test for whether or not we're truly a good, honorable American. But here's the thing. Listen, I love the fact that I'm American. By God's sweet providence, that's who I am. And I am thankful that I am. I've never been embarrassed to say that I'm American. But please hear me. More than that, I'm a kingdom citizen. That does not mean I am not American. That just means that there's a certain allegiance that I value more than that. And that is my allegiance to King Jesus. Because I, first and foremost, am a kingdom citizen. So hear me. I want to view war and bow and the sword and these things that the Lord is talking about in Hosea, I want to view them not primarily through an American lens or a political lens. I want to view them through a kingdom lens. What is our God? What's His posture toward war, toward violence, toward bow and sword? Well, in this text, He makes clear that day that's coming, that day that beats all these other days, He's going to do away with those things. That the war has been a part of humanity's history, that's those days. That day, the redeemed, God's people, will be enabled by Him to live peacefully in the land. On that day, He will do this. He will get rid of those things that perhaps we think we need in some ways more than any other. Bow and sword and battle. I will. Listen, He will. I will abolish from the land. Not I'm going to try to incorporate them into the land, but I'm going to abolish them from the land. Our God is a God who loves, loves, loves. When people come together in peace, no, you cannot, we cannot establish that ourselves. He has to do it. We're much too fallen, we're much too broken. That's why war does exist in our broken world. But take heart that He can do it. He can make right even the wrong that we turn on the news or turn on our phones and we look at the news and we see how war rages all over our world. Listen, God's big enough, He's good enough, He's strong enough, He's peaceful enough to do away with it one day. That day, He will do so. Finally, in the text, we see that On that day, God will set right our walk. On that day, God will set right our walk. Maybe you've never done this, and I'm a turkey hunter, so I've done this many times. Have you ever walked through the woods in the dark? I mean, like pitch black, right? I've had a flashlight before, but, you know, sometimes I didn't check the battery or whatever the case may be. And, you know, so I'm walking through the woods, and it's pitch black out there, right? So this is what happens. I'm not really scared of bugs and stuff, but you know, if you get a face full of a spider web, and at the very last second, even in the pitch black, you see like a dark body in the pitch black. I don't know what it is, but like a black spider is visible in the pitch black. And that thing, like, you just know it's going to be, you know, it's on your face or in your hair or not in your hair, but it's up there. And then after you overcome that, right, it's just a matter of time before a branch slaps you in the face. Or thorns start cutting into your pants. I mean, it's brutal. You walk, you're walking, but it's in darkness and it's no fun. The people in Hosea's day were walking in darkness. But the light is coming. And when the light does come, it will not only shine forward so that we can see, but the light will enable God's people to walk without tripping all the time and running into spider webs all the time and getting slapped in the face by branches all the time. The light is going to not only illumine the darkness, but the light will also enable us to walk in it. And this is so critical, and it's described in a way in this text that it's somewhat lost a little bit in translation, but we're going to look at it a little bit in depth here. We're going to look at verses 19 and 20 a little closer. I will betroth you to me forever. I will betroth you in righteousness and justice, in love and compassion. I will betroth you in faithfulness, and you will acknowledge the Lord. So, I don't know what translation you have. This is the NIV. You can see in here that in that little preposition, that two-letter preposition, is repeated a number of times in the text. Now, we might say, okay, well, so what? In fact, it's actually just, it's literally one letter in the Hebrew. It's a word, but it's the word is depicted with one letter in the Hebrew. And so, in means in, right? But we have to begin to ask ourselves, I mean, what does that mean? What is God trying to say here to his people? What is he saying to his people? And we've got to try to make sense of what's going on here. Well, that little preposition to Hosea and to the other Israelites in their day and age had the sense and could have the sense of, and I believe has the sense here in this text, of sharing in. So hang with me. This is critical. It's not just that righteousness and justice will be present somehow in the ether, but that they will share in righteousness and justice. They will share in love and compassion. They will share in faithfulness. And the reason that's critical is because God certainly is those things and displays those things to us. But he invites his people in, and in that day, that's what he's going to do. In that day, there's going to be a sharing in those things. Yes, they originate with him, but they're also going to be a part of our lives as his people. So in other words, it won't just be that God will be a God of righteousness and justice. Listen, that is true. That is perfectly true.
But his people, those who have been made in his image, he will make possible for them to share in that righteousness and justice. It will be possible for them to share in that love and compassion. And it will be possible for them to share in that faithfulness. Listen, they will walk with him. They will imitate his character. They will walk with him, like him, and for him. They won't walk foolishly or aimlessly like these Israelites, but obediently. And they'll know the one they're walking with. Look at verse 23. I will plant her for myself in the land. I will show my love to the one I called not my love. I will say to those called not my people, you are my people. And they will say, listen to this, they will say, you are my God. In the darkness of idolatry, the people of Israel walked with mute, impotent, lifeless gods, but one day, that day, will that old day, the day in the past, will come to an end, and on that day, that new day, they will finally walk with the one true God. Now, if we were living in the days of Hosea, and for roughly 700 years after Hosea's day, if we were living in those days, we would probably have to end the message here. But we're not going to, and we can't, because this is no longer just a text of prophecy about tomorrow. It's now a text that preaches about today. What I mean by that is this. When the people of Israel would read this text, that day was only yet to come. That day was not present for them. And as we continue to read through the book of Hosea, we will see that that day had not come in Hosea's day. But does that mean that we're in the same boat as the people of Israel in Hosea's day? Does that mean that that day that is talked about in this text is only yet to come for us? Well, I know it's July, but I want to talk Christmas. Because 700 plus years after Hosea's day, a baby would be born to a virgin. And that baby, despite being a king, was laid in a feeding trough. We call it a manger, but the Greek is actually a feeding trough. Our king, the king, was laid in a feeding trough. He would grow up proclaiming the kingdom. He would die on a cross, go to the grave, but he wouldn't stay there. He would walk out of the grave. Because this king wasn't like all the other kings the world has ever known. This king ushered in that day. With the coming of King Jesus, who brought with him the kingdom, that day was ushered in. Is it fully realized? Absolutely not. Because we still have events in Revelation and so forth that are going to remind us that he's going to fully make that day a reality at a point in the future. But that does not mean that that day, in a sense, isn't now. It is. That day, in a very real sense, is now. No longer a day that is coming, but a day that is here. Because in King Jesus, those that follow him can singularly be devoted to him in worship. Listen, in Jesus, you don't have to be known as an idolater. You can be known as a worshiper of the one true God. In Jesus, you don't have to approach the world and creation in it with a destructive mindset. You can approach it with a redemptive mindset. In Jesus, you can be, and in fact, read through Matthew 5 through 7. You're called to be this, but you're empowered through the Spirit to be this. You don't have to be a person who is a warmonger. You can be someone of peace. You can be a person of peace in Jesus. And in him, listen, you don't have to walk in darkness the way the people of Israel did. Jesus claims to be many things. What's one of the things that begins with an L? He says that he's the what of the world? Light. The light. Not the darkness. In him, we can walk in the light because that's who he is. We can walk as people who share in because he is the light and because we're empowered through the Spirit to live this way. We can be people of righteousness and justice. We can be people of love and compassion. We can be people of faithfulness. Listen, certainly that is not, we cannot be that perfectly, right? I mean, we're all works in progress. We are continuing to be conformed into the image of our King. So that is in part why there is a future dimension to that day. Because there still has to be a time in the yet future when that new heaven and new earth of Revelation comes to pass fully. So there certainly is a future dimension to that day. But we are in an incredible place that is not where the people of Israel were in that sense, because we don't have to just dream about that day. In part, this day that is described in beautiful detail in 16 through 23 can be experienced in the here and now. And so we can and must embody a new outlook on our worship, our world, our warmongering, and our walk that is Christ-like. Then and only then will that precious day God promises be ours for today.